As we say around here, hello again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Less than a year from now, we'll have elected our next president. After today, we'll have a better but not perfect idea of who that may be, or will we? Bernie holds a substantial lead over Hillary Clinton in the state's polls, despite her slim victory in Iowa last week. Donald Trump has the lead in polls over the wide Republican field in New Hampshire, but as the New York Times asserts today, New Hampshire is a state of surprises. And speaking of surprises, at least to some, what of former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg's sudden interest in a potential independent run at this point in the race? We have College of St. Rose political science professor Angela Ledford in the studio with us today to discuss the primary and what lies beyond it. So let's talk politics today. That means you. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And you know, you can always post your comments on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMC Radio. You can tweet your questions, I don't like it that way, and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. And you can email us, which is not the worst of ways, at voxpop@wamc.org. So anyway, I'm so delighted that we see you here today, Professor Angela Ledford, and it is so great that you're here and willing to give us the best of your knowledge. So let me ask you the first question, and that is, who's going to win?
Well, it looks like Bernie has a sizable win, lead over Hillary Clinton. I don't think there's any doubt that all of the prognosticators, and Nate Silver, who's always right, says that it looks like a sizable win for him. So,
and on the other side, anybody could tell you that, but what do you got on the other side?
Yeah, it looks like Trump as well. Though the New York Times is right. New Hampshire has a long history of surprising folks, so
and
we'll see.
And the reason for that is that, of course, that people like me become unenrolled voters. In New Hampshire, they have that same system that we have it in the good state of Massachusetts. So you walk in and you say which party you want a ballot in. Now there are many political scientists who don't like that system because they think it's injurious to the sanctity of political parties. I happen to love it. And what happens is they're finding a lot of undecideds among those unenrolled voters. Mm-hmm. And so the real question is, will they come in and will they do something that is totally unexpected? You know, I often think, Angela, that walking around and telling pollsters you're going to vote for Trump is one thing, or for Cruz. But then there comes that moment of truth when you got to go into that voting booth and say, would my mother like this? Am I doing the right thing? You know, hear that kind of thing.
Yeah, and New Hampshire also has a political culture that is, and I would say I'm not like all political scientists, and I would side with you that I like an open party system. I actually prefer that, particularly in a country that has such a strong two-party state. I think it actually encourages greater independence and some move away from that strong two-party system. But the political culture in New Hampshire, I think it's very similar in Maine, whatever you want to call it, Yankee spirit, Yankee independence, something like that. You don't always know what folks are going to do.
Whereas the old joke goes, what's the matter? Haven't you ever seen a Yankee before? I'd have to tell you the joke, but anyway, and get into a lot of trouble for it. So anyway, we've got a Marta in Poughkeepsie. Okay, Marta.
Hello, Dr. Chartok.
Bring it,
Ledford. I think Bernie is the best choice by far. You know, he's a smart, human rights-oriented public servant who believes in economic justice. And I don't even like to hear the Donald's name. I call him the DTs because he's a fascist hangover that just won't quit. And all the Republicans serve global corporate agenda, including our other Democrat, Hillary, who is a corporate lackey like her husband, Bill, you know, before her. Billionaires are not good candidates. Bloomberg, you know, he's a billionaire. That is not a good candidate for public office. To me, billionaires do not represent the populace. And if only we could bank on fair elections, Dr. Chartok, we don't have that in the United States of America.
Indeed, I've been talking, as you know, Marta, for a long time about the greatest disgrace of all, which is the ability of members of the state legislature to draw their own districts. Mm-hmm. I think that's horrible.
Just horrible.
A good example.
Yeah, horrible. Well, yes,
what is this fear of socialism? Why is everybody so, that red scare again? You know, Republicans wear red.
You better believe they're going to do it. They're going to do it. They're going to paint Bernie with a commissar's hat on with a red star on it, you know, and they'll talk about
goodness.
Him. And if he ever belonged to any socialist youth group, they're going to be all over
that. Well, don't forget Bernie's Jewish. That's really bad, right?
Well, no, I hope not. I don't think it's the Jewish thing, being Jewish myself, of course. I don't think it's the Jewish thing, Marta, which will stop people.
Would he be the first Jewish president in the United States?
Oh, yeah.
So it's a big deal. It's like the first woman, if only she was a feminist.
Right, right. Marta, thanks for the call. Appreciate
it. Thanks for taking my call, Dr. Sartori.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent to better than excellent. Let's go to Ken in Rosendale. Hiya, Ken.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I kind of echo the first caller's sentiment. And I've been a lifelong Democrat, and I truly do not understand why all Democrats are not rallying behind Bernie Sanders. If you look at his record of consistency, his record on human rights issues, his record on civil rights issues, the fact that he really represents the people, I just think it's shocking. And, you know, to hear Madeleine Albright call out other women or trying to shame them into voting for Hillary Clinton because of her gender is just, that's just shocking, you know? I just don't understand it.
And Gloria Steinem, for that matter.
Yes, yes, and Bill Clinton.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And the other kind of unrelated, but why do we even have an electoral college?
What do we have? A what college?
An electoral college.
Electoral college. I don't know, but I know one thing, and you better know it too, Ken. We have it. And unless you're going to have a constitutional change, you're going to keep it.
Isn't it about time for that?
And so somebody stopped me today and said, will you explain to me why it is that it's assumed that if Bloomberg comes in as a third-party candidate, and because Bernie is the candidate himself, and that's what Bloomberg has said, if Bernie's the candidate, I'll come in. They wanted to know why it was assumed that the Republican would win. And that's because there's an assumption that Bloomberg will bring a lot of votes from Democrats like me and others who might vote for him because they liked what he did in New York. I did. I thought he was very good with the exception of his building program, which was obscene, and his stealing of the third term, if you may remember. But I think he's a good man. He cares about people, what they eat, what they drink, you know, the other thing. And I think that's going to be very hard for a lot of Democrats that I know who don't like Hillary to resist. So then if that happens, then as Professor Ledford will tell you, right, it will go into the House of Representatives because nobody will have an electoral majority, and therefore the Republicans in the Congress will elect whoever the Republican candidate is. So, but you're right. It's an antiquated system. Angela, do you want to say something about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm that dork that can give you the full history of the Electoral College.
Great.
I mean, but suffice it to say that part of it was a gesture towards the small state versus large states. But that's part of the matrix. But the Electoral College also was adopted just like how we initially elected the Senate. In the United States, for the first 130 years, the state legislatures elected the Senate.
Sure.
And that and the Electoral College together were designed by the Federalists back in the day in order to invest the people with some level of participation, some level of input, but they were extremely scared. If you think about Federalist 10,
about the rabble,
about the masses and the passions of the masses, and not wanting to give them enough power to compromise the burgeoning nation. So those things were put in place for those reasons.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there the idea in Astoria College is a representative of democracy in a time when nobody. When communication was not what it is today. I mean, to make the transition from a representative democracy, which the Electoral College is, I believe, to a direct democracy, you know, it's like, isn't it about time? I mean, there were times where we ran on horse and buggies.
It might be, but if you're Rhode Island or if you're one of those other places, it's doubtful you're going to help them out. Hey, Ken, we got a lot of people behind you. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, Custom Exhibits, Interactive Media Displays, and Commercial Casework for corporate interiors, museum installations, and trade shows. EmpireExhibits.com. Tom McRae, Edward Jones Financial Advisor on University Drive, Amherst, Massachusetts. Member SIPC, Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. EdwardJones.com/Tom McRae. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, with a second shop now open on Windmere Avenue in the heart of Greenwood Lake. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, Skidmore Student Life and Interfaith Community, presenting the film Paperclips, A Lesson on Prejudice and a Miracle, speaker and panel March 6th at Skidmore Filene Hall, 518-584-8730. And Nine Pin Cider Works, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Sunday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple, ninepincider.com.
Thank you, Zachary, for bringing us back to reality. We'll go to Denise in Wilmington, Vermont. Denise, you're up.
Yes, Alan, the first and last time I ever spoke to you was when Hillary Clinton threw her hat into the ring, and I told you what an honor it was to be speaking to you, and now we have the professor, and it's an honor to speak to you also.
Indeed.
But I want to know what the exact date was that Hillary threw her hat in the ring. Could you tell me?
I can't remember my kids' birthdays. Why would I be able to do that?
But that's okay, because I told the woman that answered the phone that I have the belief that Bernie will win in New Hampshire today, and that the second place person is going to be feeling like they're a winner behind Trump, whether it be Marco Rubio or Chris Christie. Anyone that comes in second will feel like a winner in New Hampshire.
Well, it could be, but the one you really have to watch for is Kasich, because of the entire field, he's the sort of reasonable, to many Democrats, not to me, but to many Democrats, he's the reasonable liberal. And if he does very well, that's going to be a shout out to the right wingers that maybe we've gone over the traipses here. What do you think, Angela?
Yeah, I think so, too. We have a, not us, of course, but people tend to have a short memory about how primaries have worked out in the past. Iowa and New Hampshire are not representative of the rest of the country, but because they're so early, they and they're given so much attention, we tend to hype up who wins early on. But generally speaking, or maybe not generally speaking, but it's often the case that the people who win in Iowa and New Hampshire end up not being the nominees.
That's correct.
So I always kind of, you know, put that out there as particularly in the case of Trump, is that I think that we're going to see some fizzle with him, particularly as he moves into South Carolina.
Well, it could be.
And in the case of John Kasich, you have to win Ohio to win the presidency.
Right.
So, absolutely.
Well, you could put him on a ticket as a vice presidential candidate.
And I have a feeling he's on some people's list already.
I'm sure that's right. And you know,
it was a real honor to speak to both of you, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Denise. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Chances of getting in are very good now. We'll go to Ron in Albany. Ron, you're up.
Good afternoon. What I'd like to say, Alan, is that Bernie receives, whether win or lose, he receives a great deal of credit for bringing issues to the forefront that need to be talked about, serious things. Adam Smith at one time wrote that a government that doesn't try to make life better for its people doesn't deserve to govern. And if you look at our record in the war against the world, we're behind in so many areas. Of health, of old age, et cetera, et cetera. So it begs the question: Why don't we hear more about what is the function of government besides defense?
That's a great question, and you know, I have to thank you too, Ron, for bringing up Adam Smith in this particular context. I think it seems to be a pattern every time I'm on here that somebody brings him up, and I commend you for bringing him up in in a totally appropriate context. I think Adam Smith is somebody who is often thought of as a as sort of the father of modern day capitalism. When he was writing, we did not yet have anything like industrial capitalism. He was defending a market system. And what he was talking about was harnessing the power of individuals for the collective good. And
right.
And that's exactly how you referenced him. And we've lost that, you know, that Adam Smith has been co-opted so thoroughly by the right, for people who do know who he is. And I think you're asking all the right questions, and that you are dismayed for all the right reasons, that we are not a leader in most ways, with the exception of exploitation and an exploitive foreign policy. And I think that Bernie Sanders in many ways is the candidate for the moment. He's the one who is most credibly seeking to pressure Wall Street in ways that none of the other candidates are. So at least on the domestic front. And then with regard to foreign policy, I think he's the only one with a responsible, a thoughtful approach to foreign policy.
Well, I think, having interviewed him maybe 100 times myself on the Congressional Corner, that it's quite clear that he wanted to give voters a choice. I don't know that he thought he could win. He said from the very beginning I would ask him that, and he said he could.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that a lot of people are worried about, you know, and I'm going to vote for him, but the thing a lot of people are worried about is that he gets to be the candidate. They paint him as a dangerous Bolshevik, and he loses, and whoever the Republican candidate, be it Cruz or Trump, get to be appoint the next three people to the United States Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be something to think about, isn't it, Ron?
Oh yes, definitely, definitely a real threat.
Yeah. Okay, Ron. Yeah. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. All right. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Essie in Woodstock. Essie, it's up to you.
Hi. I want to start by saying, Alan, I listen to your program every morning. And I usually agree with you, but even when I don't, I appreciate what you have to say.
That is very nice of you.
What I'm concerned about is there's presently a recount going on in Iowa in 14 of the districts, and I heard that out of them, Bernie won already in 5.
Hmm.
And there's a good chance that he's going to come out the winner. But the Democratic, I guess, committee, whatever it is, in Iowa has already declared Hillary the winner.
Yeah, by 0.2%.
Exactly. Mm. So can they, from what I've heard, it looks like Bernie is winning and is going to really be
so
the winner.
So I said, do you think that'll make a difference? In other words, let's assume that they fess up and say, okay, you know, it turns out he won.
Right.
Because a couple of voters. Will that make America sit up and take notice if he wins the first two?
No. No, yeah. It won't. But it would make me feel better, because my concerns are that Hillary is the establishment candidate, and she is going to do anything legal and extra legal to win this election.
Essie, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate it a lot. Angela, do you want to add anything to that? No. No. Fine. We'll go to Steve in Rome. All roads go there. Steve, you're up.
Thank you very much. It's always a joy to hear you. And it's refreshing, because we walk around through this society full of slings and arrows of unpleasantness. I was wondering how you managed to hold on. Because personally, I decided that at the end of my college years, 69, 70, I said, I'm out of here. I want to get out of this country because it's crazy. Now I'm still here, but I have bought a home outside the country because I go there for a freshness of perspective. Just to reflect, our perspective is that it's going to be 100 years before this society gets there. So I guess is it being a good society member to keep on fighting in spite of this corruption?
Well, you know, Steve, I think you have to, number one. Number two, I wouldn't put down this country too much. I mean, I think that there's some real problems here, no question about it, and I think Bernie's pointing all of them out. But you still don't get your tongue cut out if you say something that the police don't like. You have an ability to really get out there and to make a difference. You know, I quite frequently think of the fact that you have all of these people who don't vote. And very, you know, I mean, let's face it. If everybody who is out of a job, if everybody who is in a class of people who were mistreated, if everybody who was, you know, of a minority group who thought, you know, prejudice is terrible in this country would go out and vote, you would never have a Republican elected. You just wouldn't. But they don't vote.
I agree.
And you don't, yeah.
The other day, I was at exercise.
Yep.
And I heard this big hulking guy on top of the machine say some terribly derogatory things about Hillary. Now, I'm not a Hillary advocate, you know, off the wall. I'm right for Bernie. But the point is, I usually just shut up. I turned around, and I went after the guy.
Uh-oh.
And I just decided it's time we start stopping the overt hate talk.
Well, good for you.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any other way to do it.
Well, it's done, like, Steve. That's how I hold on. I'm a great optimist. Thanks a lot,
right,
Steve. Appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, bye.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Peter in Niskayuna. Peter in Niskayuna, you're up.
Hi there. Thanks for taking the call. That last guy made an excellent point, which is that there has been too much hostility, I think, on both sides. And one of the messages I think Bernie is trying to put out there is he's campaigning civilly. He is refusing to take the bait when it's offered to him on things like the email scandal, you know, or various other things. And so when a couple of days ago Bill Clinton made a speech to a small gathering in a high school in New Hampshire and really railed against Bernie and said that his supporters were all sexist and that Bernie wasn't calling them out, I found that frankly disappointing and indicative of the kind of hard-nosed politics that the Clintons are famous for and well-versed in. And it frankly speaks to me of the sense of entitlement that, and here I'm going to make the leap, that they share with Bloomberg, because Bloomberg is a guy who says, well, hey, if Bernie gets the nomination, then I'm going to step in because the nation needs to be protected from his kind of dangerous thinking. And frankly, one of the things that Bill Clinton got so upset about was, hey, if you attack this guy, Bernie Sanders, then they call you part of the establishment. Well, you know what? The Clintons, they are part of the establishment.
They indeed are.
They've got $80 million in their pockets.
Well, not only that, when a bank gives you, you know, a couple hundred thousand bucks for a speech, that's a lot of money.
And you refuse to release the text.
And you think they don't want something back for it?
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey,
Peter, we're going to let all of the other people have a chance. Thanks, Peter. Appreciate it. All right. Let's go to David in Paterson, New York. Okay, David, you're on.
Thank you. I was wondering whether you saw the op-ed by Paul Krugman about John Kasich.
I didn't.
Kasich, arguably worse than the rest of the GOP field. He considers Kasich a hard money man who would have opposed the Federal Reserve's, stimulating the economy and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Democrats like Krugman. And I know him. I've interviewed him a number of times. Brilliant as they are, Nobel Prize winning as they are, don't want Kasich because they know Kasich will pull out their middle. And that's the last thing they want to have happen. They'd rather have a Cruz or they'd rather have a Trump anytime.
Yeah. And I also think that as much as Kasich has been painted as most reasonable, and of course this is a relative term given the field, the most reasonable Republican candidate and the fear that he would pull from the Democratic side, I don't think that would happen. I don't think he has a snowball's chance in hell of going anywhere.
No, but I mean, the point Krugman is making is that
we know that
Kasich's economic policies would have caused a major recession, another depression, because he would have opposed the stimulus from the Federal Reserve.
That's right. And Krugman has been very clear about, he's written many, as I'm sure you know, many columns that have to do with the absolute dire necessity of stimulating the economy in these periods. And I think he's been vindicated.
I think he's right, yep. Certainly. David, thank you. Okay, we'll go to Charlene in Montgomery. Charlene, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
We're okay. Go.
Okay, good. Yeah, listen, I mean, I'm sitting here very nice listening to you as I do every day. I just don't understand the Hillary bashing. I hear it on every channel I'm listening to, and it kind of blows my mind. You know, Bernie Sanders has been, I don't know, in government 25-plus years. That's establishment. Bernie Sanders has money in Wall Street, has, you know, 401s or whatever. That's establishment. He also has a super PAC, and he is, you know, not this real great pearly white guy. And I really don't understand why the media, the supposedly, you know, subjective, I mean, objective, which is now subjective media, is not vetting Bernie Sanders. Everything is what Hillary did and Hillary did. Well, for 25 years, we haven't really done anything to put a finger on anything she has done that's illegal or whatever, whatever.
Wait, Charlene, you have every right to make this point, every right, and you should. However, when you go before a bank and you let them pay you, and you know you're going to run for president of the United States, and you let the very bank see she's now going around saying she's a progressive, which is what she said last night, and giving you $100 or $200 or $1,000, or Bill going to Saudi Arabia and I think making $1 million, that is not illegal. It's certainly not illegal, but it ain't nice, is it?
But is she the only Secretary of State or hired person that has ever done that before?
This is called the argument of two wrongs make a right.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that people in politics, George Bush for one, $100+ thousand to talk to disabled veterans. I mean, people in politics do this all the time.
Okay, so then
no, you're right about that.
Now, wait, I'm just saying, they asked her about it. She said she wasn't sure she was going to run for president. Whatever, you don't want to believe her? Okay, fine. But my point is, guys do it all the time.
Okay, Charlene. You made your point. Angela, you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say that you know, you're right. In two ways, I sort of want to back you up on this. On the one hand, I want to say that the money in politics is a problem. And as a result of that, even candidates, including Bernie Sanders, have to raise money and they have to have super PACs in order to get elected. It's a sad state of affairs. If we the only way to do something about it is to change the composition of the Supreme Court at this stage.
But Angela, he's making millions of dollars by people who give him a little bit of money.
I'm not saying that.
Super PAC.
Right. And
you made that point.
You're right. You're right about that. I mean, money rules the day in politics, and there's no other way around that.
But how you get it is important.
How you get it is
and
important.
And if a lot of people give you a little. Charlene, thank you for being so passionate. Appreciate it.
Okay. Can I just mention one more thing?
Sure,
in support of Charlene, even though Bernie Sanders is my preferred candidate, I think she's right about some of the Hillary bashing, which has been clearly misogynistic in tone. It's one thing to go against a candidate based on their past history, based on their policy positions,
sure.
But there has been an enormous amount of kind of misogynistic, anti-female criticism of her that is illegitimate.
Where do you see it, Angela?
You see it in social media, most particularly. And you see it on mainstream news stations as well.
Well, okay. Thank you for that. Let's go to Mike in Wendell. Okay, Mike, you're on.
Hello?
Oh, no. Mike in Wendell.
Hey, I'm here.
Okay, go.
All right, good. Hey, I'm not going to vote in the Democratic primary.
Okay.
Because... Oh, I beg the question, as someone else said. I don't care. I want a Democrat to win.
Uh-huh. Well, if you want a Democrat to win, then why don't...
Yes, because the Democrats are the party of love and hope, and the Republicans are the party of fear and hate.
Yeah, but you just said you're not going to vote in the Democratic primary. I don't get that.
Well, the Democrats, not much of a difference.
You don't think there's a difference between Bernie Sanders and Mrs. Clinton?
Not much.
Okay, fair enough. Mike, you made a very good, interesting point. Appreciate it. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Watson & Associates, occupational hygiene and safety, providing comprehensive hygiene safety services and training for industrial, commercial, and governmental facilities. Safetyiselementary.com. The Habitat for Humanity Restore, 70 Fuller Road, Albany, offering gently used furniture, appliances, building materials, and more. Donations accepted, habitatcd.org/restore. Coldman Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability. Design for the next 100 years. CandHArchitects.com. Kingsway Community, Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including memory care and more. Caring in the family tradition, 518-393-8800. And Current Compliance Services, Greenwich, New York, and St. Paul, Minnesota, compliance consultants to the life insurance industry, announcing a symposium in Albany June 22nd through 24th, currentcompliance.com.
And thanks to Zachary, we're back. And here are a couple of things that have come in over the internet, Angela. I love Bernie's ideas, but the Republicans will block it all. I support Hillary. The Republicans are scared of her. If Bernie's the candidate, the Republicans will eat him alive. Great show, Doug in Woodstock. And then from Paulette in Medusa, where everybody thinks, I'm very much in favor of Sanders' goals, especially parity in health and education, but also the whole idea of putting in an honest day's work, being able to do it more than subsist on it. The thing I don't like is the idea of taking away more of the money that rich people have honestly earned in order to do this. I know Sanders has other ideas about how to do this well, but in your opinion, can he be realistically bring more equity to all Americans by cutting unnecessary programs, for example, rather than by overtaxing the rich? Angela? Well, my bet is you need a leader. Somebody comes in and they say, okay, I want to do this. I want to go to the moon, or I want to do this. And everybody says, well, you can't do that. You'd have FDR coming into a country which was severely upset about what his plans for taxation were.
Right. I mean, I think I hesitate because I think I certainly view things from a very different perspective from the person who wrote, and I very much appreciate and understand that position. But my first reaction, my first reaction was, you know, can you tax the rich too much? But no, you can. I'll sort of back off on that a little bit. But we have the largest gap between the wealthy and everybody else that we've ever had in this nation, that we've exceeded Gilded Age gap here.
Right.
And so this worries me that this maldistribution of wealth is increasing. I think it's systemic. I think it's built into the system. So I think that there are fundamental changes we have to make in order to raise the revenue that we need to raise in order to have the programs we need to have, and that having a more equitable distribution of wealth is closely associated with high levels of democracy, which I think we're interested in.
Well,
so
I couldn't agree with you more. We heard from Peter, who wrote a letter that I don't understand, but maybe you will. He says, where would Stephanopoulos, Carville, and Begala be without Ross? Ross who? Ross Perot? Ross who? Says Ross. Not to mention Bill and Hillary.
Huh.
Well, I have no idea what that means, so I just thought I'd read it. Okay, so that's what we got for now. We're going back to the phones. All the phones are loaded. Be short, because we don't have a lot of time. Mike in New Windsor, go.
Hello, this is Mike. Yes, I just want a chance to ask the voters, if we made things simple and it was only about who created policy to make the opportunity for jobs and job creation and education the key priority. Because if you don't have a job, it's very difficult to talk about all the other social issues.
Okay, so so your answer to this, Mike, is?
Simplify the way people are thinking about who they're going to vote for.
How do you do that?
If someone is in the past or plans to create jobs or create legislation to encourage production and manufacturing jobs, technology jobs, things like that, that's your person. Because they're going to create jobs. Or they're going to give an opportunity for people to go to and get an education or job training so they can get a job, because you can't have food, clothing, shelter.
Okay. Mike, we get it. Now, you make a good point. So who in fact is the candidate who you would pick out who inculcates those values?
I believe that Bernie is the best one for that.
Okay. You've made your point, and we thank you. Let's go to Christine. I'm trying to get everybody in here, folks. Christine in Mount Tremper. Go ahead, Christine.
Hi, good afternoon, folks. A few things here. I was just wondering, you know, I think Bernie has got some great reparations he wants to throw out there. Do you think the American public is ready? Do you think we're educated enough to understand what he's saying and not running into some crazy state of anarchy after it? I think he's got great ideas. I think that the American population is more online with Hillary because she's like the old shoe, you know, in a familiar, positive way. You know, she's just what we've been having. And I was also wondering how you guys think this is going to figure out in history, how this is going to look in the future. When people look back on this, you know, I mean, I do believe that Lincoln said democracy was an experiment. And Bernie has been throwing out some good points of change. But are we ready?
Were we ready for Teddy Roosevelt? Were we ready for Franklin Roosevelt? You know, I mean, look, Teddy Roosevelt was regarded as a nut. The reason he became president is he was vice president for, you know, a centrist candidate. And
but look at the time difference.
Well, yeah, there's a time difference. So
The morals and the ethics and the ideals were right at the time for those moments to happen.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, Franklin had Eleanor. And she was a great part of his political campaigning.
Okay, Christine, let me stop you. Let me stop you. Let me ask you this question. Did anybody 5 years ago think there was a time that gays would be allowed to marry in America?
Pardon?
I asked you, did you think, you know, in terms of the times, do you think 5 years ago anybody thought gays would be allowed to marry in America?
I absolutely do.
You thought so 5 years ago?
Yes.
Oh, well, you're wrong. And every poll showed it, and every state legislature showed it. And all of a sudden, the kids got angry. People rose up, and it happened. And so let me just tell you, there's always hope, and you need leadership when
you have
hope.
There is always hope, and kudos for Bernie for saying that. But I'm just wondering how you guys think this is going to pan out in history.
Well, we don't know.
And I'll hang up and let you guys mull that through for me, you could.
And thank you for asking. Bye-bye. Let's go to Jim. Jim in Warwick. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Hi. I'm interested in both your opinions regarding the selection, should either Sanders or Clinton win, their selection of Supreme Court justices. Do you think that there would be a significant difference between their choices?
Angela?
Ooh, that's such a good question. I haven't gone too far down this road. I've certainly been thinking about, I certainly realize the implications of the differences between the parties, what that would mean for the Supreme Court, because I think that it's going to be the absolute most crucial thing in many ways that will happen as a result of this election. I haven't thought about too far down the road about the differences between who they might nominate, but my guess would be that, and I don't have particular names in mind, but since you asked that question, now I'm going to be thinking about that tonight. Thanks for that. I am thinking about the very serious concern that Sanders has about the role of high finance in the economy, and in not just in the United States, but in the global economy, about Citizens United and the role of money in campaigns. And my thinking would be that that would be a serious component of anybody he would nominate for the Supreme Court would be not just overturning Citizens United. I don't think he would be so narrow, even though that's not a narrow decision. But I think he would be very interested in putting people on the court who want to fundamentally rethink how the law supports finance in this country and that overlap between politics and economics.
You're probably right. The other thing, Jim, that I think is very important to remember is who's in control of the Senate. Because,
yes, absolutely. No question.
Because if the Republicans are in control, there's going to have to be a certain amount of compromise. You have to appoint somebody who can get through.
Right.
The Democrats are in control. Maybe some of the same, but I think that would be an important part. of it. There are very attractive people. I watched Pete Berardi yesterday, you know, in our who was live on our Linda Norris and on the stage, and you know, there's a guy I'd love to see on. There are people who think that Obama should be appointed to the Supreme Court. We've heard that one recently, and Hillary made something of that. Jim, great question. We'll all think about it. Thank you. Let's go to Denise in Saugerties. Denise, you're on.
Hi, both of you. Thank you very much. And I want to take an oppositional position. I teach women's studies. I also teach areas of Black and Puerto Rican and Latino studies. And from my perspective, Iowa and New Hampshire are totally not representative of what most of America looks like.
Absolutely.
40% of the voting base for the Democratic Party are people of color.
Yes, but will those people turn out, Denise?
Black women have a higher turnout rate than any other Democrats.
And Black men?
Look at the data in Pew has researched all of this.
Yeah, and Black men?
Moving into Super Tuesday. Moving into places like South Carolina, and though certain Bernie supporters have suggested that we shouldn't have primaries in red states, they're willing to throw everybody under the bus, who are the initiators of massive civil rights movements. We can't abandon the South. We can't abandon, because that's where a huge part of the Democratic Party is. And I think that if you look at all of the polling, not just Nate Silver, but Sam Wang and Marcos Melitzis at Daily Coast, who actually did better than Nate Silver because he factored in the Latino vote in Nevada and places like that. You're going to have to understand that Bernie Sanders has, unfortunately, and I like Bernie's economic policies, but Bernie has a blind spot. And his entire campaign, from the beginning, included no people of color in high staffing positions. He's advised by a D.C. hack, Tad Devine. And he, when pressured by Black Lives Matter, then packed
some things in. Okay, Denise.
Hillary has a very long,
over
decades relationship with...
Okay, Denise, hold on. For a second.
Latino community.
Denise, I'm the moderator. If I ask you to hold on, and I do it nicely.
I'm holding on.
Hold on a second. And that is, we got five people behind you. I need a sentence from you which sums up what you've been telling us.
Okay. Who do you think is going to take the primaries in Super Tuesday? Not Iowa and not New Hampshire.
I have no idea. Do you?
I don't. But I think that you raise a lot of really important issues. Yeah. And I would say that I think you're right about Bernie Sanders. I think he has some things to learn. I think he stumbled in response to really, really serious queries by Black Lives Matter. I think that I was definitely disappointed that he did not give an interview to Coates from The Atlantic, asking him to, you know, speak about his response to refusal of reparations. And I think that that was a missed opportunity for him. And maybe it points out that his recognition that he cannot speak to that effectively. I'm not sure. I think he has a lot to learn on that. And I agree with you.
Okay. Denise, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Kathy from Saratoga. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'll make it very quick. I just have two quick questions, and I love Bernie. If he were to be president, and given what's happened the last 8 years trying to get things pushed through, how could he possibly get the things that he's talking about done? And two, do you think he's ready for the international stage?
I think he's a tough cookie. Mm-hmm. And as you know, I've interviewed him maybe 100 times, and you know, this is not a guy to fool around with.
Yeah.
And he knows how to educate himself in each of these areas. I tell you, if I'm the Russians and I have a choice between him and somebody else, I think I would eschew dealing with Bernie, because Bernie's tough.
I agree. I think the question about whether or not he's ready for the international stage, I'm not too worried about that. I think your first question is the one that is elicits a more troubling response.
These are great, but how is he going to get this done when Obama struggled so much?
I wonder, and I really say this as a query. My honest question is, is there any such thing anymore in America as a transformational president? I think that the position has become so ensconced and institutionalized that I'm not sure that is possible. I think to some degree this is what's happened with Obama. Part of it was that maybe we expected things he wasn't promising, but also that even some of the things that he really wanted to do are impossible in that environment.
You know, Angela, I love Obama. I really do. I think he's a great guy. But I think Bernie could eat his lunch. I mean, I think Bernie is one tough guy, and people have counted him out for a long, long time. And he has always performed above expectations. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I hope he does it. I hope he can do it.
Okay, Kathy, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Barry and Kusaki. Okay, Barry, you're on. But you got to make it fast.
I just want to make a quick point of the Citizens United. When this went through, this came out of the Supreme Court, it changed the face value of what was a contribution from, you know, a rich person, maybe $100,000. I don't know what it was. But now, to the Koch brothers, they're donating up to $900,000.
Okay, you're right. Okay, you're right. But what do you make of it?
Let me make a point of it.
Please.
That becomes an investment rather than a contribution.
Yeah.
They want that money back. They want an investment. They want to get the return on it.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so we all agree with that. But your point is now?
Well, that is the point, that it changed the game. It really changed the game.
Yeah, no, well, I can't find anybody in my camp or around me who don't believe that. Thank you very much, Barry. Let's go to Barry in Scotia. Barry, we only have a couple of seconds now. Go ahead.
Just briefly, I would say that, first of all, if we were concerned about the number of people who are not voting, Jeb Bush would not be in the election because everybody would have pointed out the 10,000 votes he threw off the ballot in 2000 that threw Florida to Mr. Bush. And secondly, I think that if the Supreme Court is so important, why don't we just scrap the presidency and the legislature if they're so incompetent and vote for the Supreme Court directly?
So that's a modest proposal. Thank you very much. Let's go to Bennett in Newburgh. Bennett, very quickly.
Real quick. I think it's absurd to suggest that Bernie has a problem with black people. One of the problems is that just like the book What's the Matter with Kansas said that people there are voting against their own interests, I'd ask the question, what's the matter with Harlem? Hillary and Bill have been horrendous for black people. Somehow they've managed to pull the wool over their eyes from the Welfare Reform Act, which kicked mothers and children off of welfare into poverty, from increasing the jail sentences because of crack cocaine and developing...
Okay, but don't you think that's somewhat condescending to say that they...
All right. What's that? I didn't hear you.
Don't you think that's somewhat condescending to say they've had the wool pulled over their eyes? What are you?
No, it's not, because it's a fact, because they're still supporting... But many of them are waking up. It's not at all condescending. Is it condescending to say that the people in Kansas are voting against their own interests?
Well, I don't think... No, I think that you're making a good point, that there's much to be... frustrated with, out of the Clinton administration.
Well,
I'd say it's not an either-or thing. I'd say both sides have a race problem.
Well, good point or
no,
not.
I'm sorry. Bernie has been perfect on civil rights.
Bennett.
He got arrested for trying to desegregate the school.
We are out of time, Bennett. I'm so sorry. Thanks. Appreciate it. Okay, so anyway, I want to thank everybody who called in, who was left on the line, like Tom of Johnstown, who wanted to know who will run with Bernie, Austin of Red Hook, who talked about the power of the young vote, and Brian of Albany, who wanted to know about Bloomberg entering the race. Maybe the next time, folks. And Angela, I hope you'll come back and do that with us.
Absolutely.
Okay. We want to thank Dr. Angela Ledford for joining us on the show today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Larrick, presenting the Nurture by Nature exhibition on display until February 12th, accompanied by Larrick's early gift shop, larac.org, for 2016 festival information and applications, upstate divorce mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill, upstatedivorcemediation.com, NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com, Empire State English, Capital Region Language Center offering language classes in Spanish, Portuguese, Chinese, and English as a second language at their locations and at places of business. CRLCAlbany.org for details. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org/Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. So long.